right up here on WBAI New York.
Bahia na cabeça. Simbora! Aqui você balança pro lado, pro lado, pro lado. Bota a mão no pescoço pro outro, pro outro, pro outro. Vambora! Aqui você balança pro lado, pro lado, pro lado. Bota a mão no pescoço pro outro, pro outro, pro outro. Aqui você balança pro lado, pro lado, pro lado. Balança comigo. Bota a mão no pescoço pro outro, pro outro, pro outro. Vambora! E quero ver toda a galera dançando animada. Jogando os braços pra cima, olha o grito da mata. Ei, ei, que tá de fora quer logo chegar pra ver. A festa tá boa, se liga, só falta você. De banda, quero ver, todo mundo olhando, eu quero ver, e nesse vira, 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 e nesse vira, 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 eu quero ver, você dançar de banda, quero ver, todo mundo olhando, eu quero ver, e nesse vira, 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 e nesse vira, 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 aqui você balança pro lado, pro lado, pro lado, pra que swing, bota a mão no pescoço, pro outro, pro outro, pro outro, simbora, simbora, pra que você balança. Bota a mão no pescoço pro outro, pro outro, pro outro. Cintura de mola, quero me meter. É, samba no pé, meu bem. Joga duro, joga duro, quebra. Hey! Eu quero ver toda a galera dançando animada. Jogando os braços pra cima, olha o grito da massa. Hey, hey, quem tá de fora quer logo chegar pra ver. A festa tá boa, se liga, só falta você. Pra dançar, dançar, dançar. Rebola, bola, bolê. Vê se desembola, não enrola, quero ver o tererê, tererê, tererê. Pra dançar, dançar, dançar. Rebola, bola, bolê. Vê se desembola, não enrola, quero ver o tererê, tererê, tererê. Eu quero ver você dançar de bunda, quero ver, todo mundo olhando.
Tune to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
Creative Unity Collective, alternating Friday nights, midnight to 3, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Once upon a time when we were colored, stolen from the mother. 400 years later, Mr. Charlie's on some other. Take this as an affirmative act, to slap at the whack. Catch brothers, sisters who are falling through the cracks. Creativity and unity, the keys to maintain our humanity and our sanity, no vanity. Materialism, big willy crap, just progressive elevation. Can I get a soul clap? Keep it going on. CUC, keep it going on. Keep it going on. Creative unity, keep it going on.
And a good Tuesday morning to all of you at WBAI, or should I say in WBAI land? Maybe that will do it. Anyhow, Clayton Riley on time with you here in the morning. We've got company coming about 8:15. Very important issue, particularly considering some of the news of today. Headlines: as new peace talks go on, Palestinians criticize Clinton. We're going to be talking about that, particularly as it pertains to the shift from one administration to another, to exactly what that's going to mean in the negotiations going on between Israel and the people of the Palestinian community and world. As perhaps predicted by some, headline New York Times, Bush acts to halt overseas spending tied to abortion. Now, many have said that the Bush administration will move swiftly and with dispatch to end abortion, to reverse Roe versus Wade. I continue to believe, and this obviously is mere idle speculation, but I continue to believe that the Bush administration is going to dance around the issue. Now, this has to do with overseas spending. Let us read a paragraph to you. President Bush moved today to deny federal aid to overseas groups that provide abortion counseling or otherwise help women obtain abortions, using his first full day of work in the Oval Office to reinstate restrictions that had been in place under the previous Bush and Reagan administrations. All right, well, the principal fallout, I think, eventually to come to this will come even from Republican women. The president's wife has also said that she is opposed to overturning Roe versus Wade. Now, of course, you know, when you get among Republicans, particularly the conservatives, what women have to say means very little. Sometimes we may say the same thing is true in other areas of political life, including progressives. So it's not going to carry a lot of weight that Laura Bush, the wife of the president, already on record, quoted last week as saying that she is opposed to the overturning of Roe versus Wade. We will see as how this proceeds. Information coming from the Republican convention in November was that there was a sufficient number of Republican women, and I believe an organization actually in the Republican Party, Republican Women for Choice, to see that folks don't go too far with this. Anyway, the president's initiative on the anniversary, the 28th anniversary, actually, the Roe versus Wade decision, limits the use of family planning aid. And this again, the president quoted saying, "It is my conviction that taxpayer funds should not be used to pay for abortion or advocate or actively promote abortion either here or abroad." Right. He wrote, this is an executive order, incidentally, and so it doesn't have to go through Congress and the Senate. The same act used by Harry Truman in 1948 in bringing an end to segregation in the armed forces, using his powers under the Executive Order Act for the presidency. You can make these things by fiat, literally, and not have to have approval from Congress or the Senate. Mr. Bush wrote this memorandum stating his position to the Agency for International Development, which administers and monitors family planning aid to overseas groups. All right, so the overseas groups get the bite. You'll also be interested in an article in today's paper of record. Michael K. Powell, the oldest son of Secretary of State Colin L. Powell, was selected to head the Federal Communications Commission. And as the Times points out, he will bring a far different agenda than that of his predecessor. He'll bring probably a far different agenda than the predecessor's predecessor as well. Michael Powell is an outspoken conservative. He even differs with his father on the issue of affirmative action. And it's always surprising how people who clearly themselves, as he hints, you know, having benefited, you know, once you get on the boat, you pull up the ladder. So nobody else can get there. Everybody else has to do it by hard work, which is okay if everybody has to do it by hard work, not just some. Story we had here, and of course you put flesh on the print when you see in B1 section today, the Metro section of the New York Times, a picture of the McAllister family. Let's start there, and we have a situation where Malachi McAllister, who was convicted at any rate of terrorism, love the way these things are written. You remember we talked to Bernadette and Malachi McAllister just a few days back, actually. The situation is this. The family was driven out of Northern Ireland, driven out of their home in Belfast, because of the activities of Malachi McAllister. He said he, after serving time in prison, he said he was bothered by the killings that were going on. And after gunfire riddled the family's Belfast home in 1988, he and his wife fled with their four children, first to Canada, and then to the United States, where they requested political asylum. And he said to authorities that if he returned to Northern Ireland, returned to Belfast, old enemies would be waiting. That simply means that, in all likelihood, the family to return, they would be killed. It's not rocket science here. It's a very simple equation. If the McAllisters were forced to return to Belfast, they would have been the object of a plot to kill them. Now, the United States has decided, and I mean, this just seems so muddle-headed, or perhaps we should say mean-spirited. The decision that the United States has made is that the wife of Malachi McAllister, Bernadette McAllister, his spouse, and his children were granted asylum. Now, actually, that means that I believe there are two children still at home. Nicola and Sean, I believe, are still the children living at home. They have been granted asylum in the United States. Their father, Malachi McAllister, has not been granted asylum. And so the United States is saying, basically, that he should go back to Belfast, where in all likelihood he would be killed within a matter of weeks, while the family waited here to make funeral arrangements. Right? That's U.S. policy. Now, opening by Dan Barry, the desire of Malachi McAllister to continue living with his family in Wellington, New Jersey, would not be so problematic if he had not once been an Irish terrorist. Now, I doubt that, you know, the folks planning to kill him would be described in that way. He already admits to his former life, although he prefers to think of himself as an ex-soldier in a civil war. Entirely reasonable assumption, in my view, here at WBAI. As a member of the Irish National Liberation Army, a left-wing paramilitary organization, he plotted to kill two Royal Ulster constabulary officers. You know, even as this is written, of course, when you say two Royal Ulster constabulary officers, the ring there is, you know, the right guys, the good fellows, you know, no stain on their reputations. Get folks to talk to you about the activities of the Royal Ulster Constabulary and what they have been doing over many years, particularly in Belfast, but throughout Northern Ireland. One of the targets of the effort made to kill two Royal Ulster Constabulary officers resulted in the slight wounding of one, and it is said here the plot against the other fizzled. All right, so plot ended in disarray, obviously. Now, this means that a man who was part of something that resulted in the slight wounding of someone and a fizzled part of the plot, on the other hand, guy has to be sent back to his death because of the way we see left-wing and right-wing things. All right? This past October, a federal immigration judge in Newark agreed that he had turned his life around, speaking of McAllister, but said the change, quote, does not diminish the gravity of his earlier criminal activities. And the judge ordered that Mr. McAllister be deported, also granting, as we said, asylum to the rest of the family. Now, in all of this, there is this note as well. In February of 1982, information provided by his brother, Robert McAllister, an Irish National Liberation Army assassin turned informant led to Mr. McAllister's arrest. Great language here, isn't it? Mm. There's no way to read this, incidentally, to come away with the feeling, obviously promoted by the New York Times, that the folks who are Republicans, incidentally, in that part of the world, not as we use the term Republicans here, but the folks on the left, in essence, the folks fighting in a number of organizations under the, I guess you could say, the media umbrella of the IRA, are people who are engaged in a war of national liberation, are people who are fighting a struggle for justice. And yet all the language here would indicate that they're nothing but a ragtag bunch of crazed assassins trying to bring down British rule. Well, yeah. You want to look at it that way? That's the way it is. Okay, we're at 6:26 in the morning, and we will turn it over now to our man at the controls and at the weather desk.
Oh, good morning.
Mark Blinton. You've got to wait till, you know, I got to do the proper introduction.
Oh, well, so,
you know?
Yeah.
Okay, you want to back up?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. We want to turn things over now to our man at the controls and at the weather desk, Brother Mark Blinton. Good morning.
Well, good morning. It's 6:28 and it's 24 degrees with a high of 40 today. Be mostly cloudy with the winds between 5 and 10 miles an hour.
A high of what?
Of 40.
It was 21 yesterday.
Yes, that's, yeah, exactly.
It's going to be 40 today.
It's going to be 40 today.
Now, something is amiss. See, this is not weather anymore. You know what I'm saying? I mean, something is happening in our universe.
Mm-hmm.
Around the planet. Something is going on.
It could be that Mir space station.
Robert...
Yes, that's been, he's been talking about
yes,
it the past couple of days.
Telling us about it for quite some time. We'll see. I mean, from 21 to 40 in a matter of a little over 24 hours.
Yes, it is a big jump.
Yeah, and that's why people are...
Yes.
And see, here's the plot, you see. This is part of the pharmaceutical industry's effort to promote products which they claim are for your health. But have you been in a drugstore recently? Go to the section where they sell cold remedies or remedies for the flu.
No.
There are like five different flu remedies.
Uh-huh.
You know, liquids, pills, the injections will probably be next. But I mean, you can go in. You can go into the, if you start sniffling, if you feel you have a cold, you can go to the drugstores. You know, we have drugstores everywhere.
Yeah, that's true.
You can't turn the corner without the drugstore leaping out and grab. They have magnets that drag you inside. Once you get in there, you see you can spend literally hundreds of dollars buying stuff to rid yourself of a cold, the flu. Any number of other things that probably there will be some new designations. You know, deep flu, middling flu,
yeah,
severe flu, all of these things requiring you to buy any number of this stuff's expensive, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then, when it gets beyond control, you have to start using prescriptions. So you're sunk pretty deep into... This is why people, you know, really don't have... much disposable income. In other words, you can't think in terms of having one to buy. Go to the theater,
yeah,
where tickets are now $75 a piece. Go to the movies.
Oh,
tickets,
yeah. $9.50, $10 someplace. Well, I see it from the prescription drug as far as the senior citizens are concerned.
Oh, man.
You know, that deal with my mother. You know,
absolutely.
She had to buy, and it's very expensive to buy medication.
Yeah.
And I don't see how some of them can afford it, really.
Well, you know, one of the things we're planning, Mark and I say, because it's still at the planning stage, we want to start to bring in people to broadcast with us on a regular basis who can address these issues.
Mm-hmm.
A pediatrician, a doctor whose specialty is pediatrics. People to talk about women's health in the sense of what about the people you're talking about, seniors, but also young women with children who need to know what they should have in the house to protect their own health and the health of their children.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of feeling that every time they come down with something or every time their health seems to be in disarray, they have to rush off to a clinic, which often means going some distance and perhaps in this kind of fluctuating weather, temperature-wise, is not the best idea in the whole world. But we want to start to send to people information in regard to these things. A lot of times, you know, for example, I got two recipes, you know, essentially saying the next time, you know, the cold or the flu comes down, here's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And these turned out to be things, really household remedies,
right.
Stuff that right there in the house that you can use. But we will be making an attempt to offer professional advice in this regard as we move along. Now, 6:32. What's that big flame we're looking at there? Something else is happening. Some new disaster about to be followed. I told you about Colin Powell. Sad to note that the Mets' leadoff hitter in their glory years, Tommy Agee, has passed away.
Oh.
At age 58, apparently stricken outside his office here in Manhattan, suffered a heart attack and passed on. Nearly 33 years ago, Tommy Agee was preparing to lead off his first exhibition game with his new team, the Mets. But first, his new teammate, Ed Charles, had a word of advice regarding the Cardinals' ace pitcher, one Bob Gibson. I told him, watch out for Gibson. He's going to introduce himself to you. Charles recalled this yesterday when he said, first pitch, bam, right in the head. You could hear it all over the ballpark. Thank God it hit him flush on the helmet. To this day, Gibson denies throwing a smoking greeting card at the new man to welcome him to the National League. Okay, Bob. Sure. We understand. No question at all. But Tommy Agee, yesterday, stricken in front of his... Was it yesterday? I guess we really should look and be sure what it was. Let me see here. Tommy Agee, let's jump into page 5. I can't really find that section again. Anyway, Tommy Agee, age 58, has passed on. And you will remember that in that glorious World Series of 1969, memory serves me, Tommy Agee made two of the most sensational catches in the outfield that perhaps have ever been seen, in my judgment anyway. You have to go a long way before you'll find anything similar to the great catches that Tommy Agee made in that real storybook World Series, the Mets against the Baltimore Orioles. The Baltimore Orioles at that time, including people, Brooks Robinson, and Frank Robinson, really outstanding ball club. And, of course, the Mets, Tommy Agee, and I remember the guy who played left field. Anyway, some of you will remember. Now, some things are going on. We will move to speak about as we continue. As I mentioned, we do have a company coming at 8:15. I had also hoped to have a conversation with Joanne Bob, who is the chair of the local advisory board, because some activities are at least planned that I think of significance to the listeners. And we will hope to have a conversation with Joanne Bob perhaps between 7 and 8 o'clock this morning. Now, once again, I just want to mention the FCC chair, Michael Powell, obviously because of what's going on here at WBAI, the FCC appointment becomes particularly significant. It's obvious that the commission will move aggressively to a conservative agenda. That, of course, will affect everybody in broadcasting, but perhaps most particularly those of us who consider that our broadcasting is in some ways off the charts, left end of the scale. But Michael Powell, who has been a commissioner for some years and apparently a very powerful voice on the FCC, even though he was, dare we say it, a minority member, meaning actually that he was part of a split on the board that had more Democrats than Republicans. That kind of minority, you see. And tomorrow, I suppose, you want to do something about the quintessential New York example of an iconography that these days is rarely mentioned. So this is for those of you who are New Yorkers, I'm afraid. You know, we don't want to seem like we're being folks who indulge in exclusivity, but tomorrow, when we have this particular discussion, those of you who are from Cleveland or from Slippery Rock, Pennsylvania, some of you may be from Boise, Idaho, for all you know, or from Walla Walla, Washington. This discussion will probably have very little resonance for you. But for those of you who are New Yorkers, for those special types, and we will include among the special types those of you who are from the four boroughs of New York, that being the Boogie Down. As you know, the Bronx got its name because a family named Bronk owned much of the land. And people would come by and say, whose land is that? They'd say, well, it belongs to the Bronk family. So the land belongs to the Bronx. Yeah, okay. Then we come to mighty Manhattan. As we move south to the magnificent Big Apple, or in the minds of many, the Big Mango. At any rate, that huge island in the center of the universe called Manhattan. And certainly the People's Democratic Republic of Brooklyn is included in this, and even the shadow government that exists in Queens, I believe. Is that the other place? Queens, right? Okay. All right, Queens. We'll get some props anyway. Is it forget who? What about Staten Island? That's upstate, isn't it? These are the people who said they wanted to secede from New York City. And I say, hey, bless you. If you're ever in town again, stop by and say hello. But folks who committed to the notion they wanted to cut their ties with the city, fine. So we will continue to regard New York City as a place with four boroughs. That is, the Boogie Down, Magnificent Manhattan, the People's Democratic Republic of Brooklyn, and, in small letters, lowercase, Queens. All right? Now, since we are hoping, we will still hope, to have a conversation with the chair of the local board sometime, hopefully between 7 and 8 o'clock, we will get the decks cleared, hopefully, by, I suppose, opening the phone lines. We'll hear a little music first, and we'll transition through that space with a piece. Yesterday, we were playing from this, and a lot of responses. I talked to folks later on in the day, actually, when I got home, about this disc called Nirvana Lounge. And we're going to play cut 14 from side 2 and let you dig this. And this goes out by way of saying, Mario Mario, eat your heart out. WBAI 99.5 FM. All right, it's 6:45 in the New York morning here at WBAI. And we're going to take some phone calls from you for the next few minutes anyways. 209-2900 is the number. And, of course, it's area code are we still in? You know, the area codes keep changing, man. We still 2012. I guess, I think so.
There's 347 and 646 now.
Yeah, but you also have Brooklyn and the Bronx with 718, which makes no sense to me.
Yes,
at all.
And then they have it split up. If you get a new number, you get a new area code now, so it's not the same. So
also, Suffolk County has changed from what was previously 516 to 631.
Even upstate, or like Upper Westchester, they changed. Mm-hmm. I think it's 845 or one of those.
Okay. All right, we'll speak to you on the phones again. Once again, the matters at hand, I'm sure, are still peaking in the interest frame of folks out there. WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to, I'm so perturbed. I don't understand these Californians. Why can't they go into solar energy? They've got a perfect location and they've got the perfect need.
Yes, well, who would own solar energy? What company would have the patent?
The state.
Yeah, the state would own it, but this is precisely the point. The company, you know, I'm sure you're familiar because you raised the question. You know the deal that went down with these West Coast power companies, floated loans of billions of dollars, defaulted on the loans, literally walked away from their responsibility, turned it back over to the state. The state apparently totally unprepared to run, and you're absolutely right, solar power would be the answer. But the fact is that the question would rage probably for years about who should have control of the energy and power companies in that regard. Remember, we still live in a place where folks feel that private ownership of things is a primary duty, that the state should not be in the business of running anything. And considering that we have an administration committed to that viewpoint, it's going to be... I absolutely agree with you. I should say that. But I don't think you're going to see that. Incidentally, a friend called me just a few days ago from Oakland. And I said, how are you doing? He said, well, I'm sitting here in the dark. Mm-hmm. I said, well, what do you mean? He said, well, the power goes off. Nobody knows. It could be 20 minutes. It could be an hour. There are no ways to... You can call all you want here, there, and everywhere else. No one can tell you anything. And apparently, this is the truth of the matter up and down the West Coast right now.
Yeah, it's just so dumb. I just can't get over this business, this rigidity to capitalism. It's so dumb.
Yeah, it is. And particularly in situations, you can imagine the sort of havoc this wreaks. I mean, what about seniors who suddenly see their homes plunged into dark, can't get to their medication, for example?
Yeah,
or
I have
children lost on the... on the way through their apartment building. Maybe
I have a brother and his girlfriend living in Santa Cruz, and she's got lupus.
It's very bad news.
They can't afford this. This is endangering her health, personally.
But, you know, I'm glad you brought up the point about solar power, because this is something, you know, we've been batting around here in New York City. You know, there's several buildings. I lived on the Upper West Side for a long time. There's several buildings there that have the solar systems involved.
Which ones? I live on the Upper West Side.
Really? This is, there's one building near, okay, if I was looking from 106th South, I was up at a friend's terrace, and you could see the solar panels on the top of a building looking south from 106th Street on Broadway, on the west side of Broadway. Yeah,
and
I was quite startled.
You should have a computer toy.
No. I asked his friend. He said, no, this is a building that somehow managed some years ago to have these panels installed. And they've had apparently a real bitter battle about it as well, because, again, the companies that provide power at profit will also always resist the effort of the citizen.
They could make twice as much money if they used solar.
Well, I'm not sure they could, but they would try, certainly. Listen, thank you very much for calling.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
You too. BAI, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello. Goodbye. BAI. Oh, we're having folks Having fun with the phones, I guess, this morning, right?
Clayton.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Clayton. You're still doing a great job.
Thank you.
Okay. Quick take, today's New York Times op-ed piece by Tom Friedman. Surprisingly for him, he wrote a pretty intelligent piece, but it's a sad commentary on our society that this undemocratically selected nitwit is considered a great foreign policy guru. In this piece, he refers to Serbia proper as being ethnically pure. Now, if he really knew what he was talking about, he would know that Serbia proper is and has been for quite some time 30% non-Serb, with high concentrations of Hungarians, Albanians, Gypsies, Slavic Muslims, non-Serb Slavs. And guess what? They live peacefully together. And guess what else? The government, even during the evil Milosevic era, funded ethnic publications for all of these communities. So when you have these other undemocratically selected nitwits overrated that they are, like Susan Sontag calling Serbia Nazi Germany, you want to know something? The KLA, Croatia, the Izetbegovic Muslims, they're the real Nazis in comparison. And I'll be sending you some follow-up on this.
Please do. Thank you.
Okay, take care.
All right, at 6:52, we continue. WBAI, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It was very interesting for me that you read the piece on the Irish liberation fighter and had so much sympathy for him. At the same time, we have all these prisoners in New York State,
mm-hmm.
Rockefeller State.
Well, so what's the point?
And the morning program actually had a very main component on that.
Yeah.
But we've seemed to be missing it for the past.
Well, that is because, if you're talking about Fielding Dawson, that is because Fielding has chosen to take a leave of absence. We're hoping he returns.
No, I'm talking about the project to overturn the...
What are you talking about?
Well, in New York State, as you well know,
yes.
And many of the listeners of the morning program know,
mm-hmm.
We have a repressive law.
Yes. The Rockefeller drug law. Is that what you're talking
exactly.
about? Okay.
And we've had a main component in the morning program.
You know, who was doing that main component?
Number of activists.
Well, who were they?
Grandpa Al Lewis.
Okay. Well, Grandpa Al Lewis does not do the morning show.
I didn't say he did the morning.
Well, you mentioned them, you mentioned, listen to me. You mentioned the morning show and activists who were doing this on the morning show. I want you to tell us who those people are.
Okay, for the third time, I said the morning program
yes.
had a main component which was devoted to overturning of this law.
Who was doing that?
Was a number of activists.
Well, tell me who the number of activists are. I'm just asking you for the names. Because if we know the names, we'll get them back to make you happy. You tell us who they are, we will reach out to them, ask them to return, and continue their activism.
Hey, I don't appreciate your condescending.
Say goodbye. You want to say goodbye? Good. Okay, he doesn't want to say goodbye. BAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, I found it interesting yesterday that Robert Knight was reporting on the pardons
mm-hmm.
and the fact that Leonard Peltier was not granted a pardon, but Susan Rosenberg was.
Yes.
I wrote in my Christmas letter that if Clinton had any decent bones in his body, he would pardon both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are pretty familiar with Leonard Peltier's case. I don't know if they know that Susan Rosenberg was given 58 years for being found with explosives and munitions, and that was the only charge. And in that case, he did grant a pardon, but from my own research, I'm convinced he did not in Leonard Peltier's case because he feared the reaction of the FBI, who mounted a very huge campaign against his being pardoned. Clinton, I don't know if how many of the listeners of the morning show, hello?
We're listening to you.
Oh, this phone I was having a little trouble with. here, Mike Levine's program, where they had a CIA pilot on who was one of the pilots bringing drugs into the country.
Yes.
And, of course, there were many locations, not just out in L.A., but one of the primary locations was in Arkansas when Clinton was governor. And, you know, several times Republicans would start to do an investigation of MENA Arkansas Airport, but they always never carried through because the Republicans under the Bush-Reagan administration were so very much involved themselves. But this was a major operation, and, of course, this was all never came out. I mean, there were many articles in Arkansas itself, which I got from the Arkansas Committee, which described, you know, these strange going-ons of the training of Contra pilots and so forth there. And there's been films that have come out about certain things that took place. But, you know, anyone that would review those would know that there were things going on. And, of course, the book by John Cummings and Terry Reed, which described it most thoroughly. And John Cummings was a veteran journalist who investigated the Bay of Pigs. And he realized the same thing was going on in Arkansas, that you couldn't have that much going on without the state government being involved. So I really feel that Clinton was... since he doesn't have the power of the presidency behind him anymore, was afraid because the FBI knows all of this stuff.
Well, indeed, but let me say something. Even as we listen to you, we know that there is a great deal of information. You've gathered a good deal of it. The point is, it is one thing to have the information, and it's another thing to have the force, perhaps the vitality of a movement that can act on that information. It isn't, I think, that we lack people who know about these things, but we do lack the, you know, the coherent organizational activity that could address these issues. I mean, again, people find information in an amazing variety of sources these days. But what never seems to happen beyond that is that, the mobilization that needs to take place is what does not proceed from the gathering of information.
Actually, I worked on the Cassini, try to stop Cassini, the space probe. I was very involved in doing that with Love Earth. And that's the only time in the White House history that more calls came in. I was told by someone who was very close to it that more calls came into the White House on that issue than any other. But the second was Leonard Peltier. I mean, there were... so many calls going in there, but they were, you know, completely ignored. He never met with his supporters or Harberry or anyone.
Okay, but I would just question your suggestion that they were completely ignored. The fact is they weren't ignored. The reaction was to that demonstration by the FBI agents. I think had that not happened, and as you have said yourself, people, I think, throughout the country were startled, and I think the president, the then president, Clinton, saw a demonstration that gave him pause. I don't know that we would be assured that he would have granted Leonard Peltier a commutation of his sentence or whatever, but I mean, the point is that the demonstration on the part of the FBI in Washington that day, I think, sealed the deal that Leonard Peltier would not be let out of prison.
But, you know, my speculation is that he did it out of self-interest because...
Well, that self-interest, reacting to the FBI, is self-interest, is it not?
Yeah, but it's because they got the goods on him, in my opinion.
Well, okay, whatever, for whatever reason. But, I mean, what we're saying is that his reaction was not to go against the FBI, but they have the goods on him or whatever, because it's an organization that in many parts of this country, and perhaps in the Oval Office as well, strikes fear into the hearts of people.
Well,
and
you know what J. Edgar Hoover did to President...
Yeah, well, there you are.
Maybe there's a sort of another group that does the same. Who
could
knows?
Very well
okay,
be.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Bye.
WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello.
Hello, good morning. Can we talk about WBAI?
Well, of course we can talk about WBAI.
Okay.
If you'd like to talk about BAI.
All right. The previous caller said that